Oh, good evening.
Good evening.
Nice to see you, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
And Karen. Been missing you. What a treat. We talked about the chain of causation, or the matrix of conditional arising, or what happens with ignorance as a natural course of things in turning around the whole circle of all the way to old age and death. It's all spelled out in red pine, of course, but there's also a picture that goes with it. I think there are even enough here. And some of you have seen it, most of you have probably seen it already, but I thought it would be helpful to have a reminder, since we were just talking about that last week, of how one thing leads to another, cause and effect, that if we are not aware, then our body carries us forward into life and death, essentially. And this is what in the Heart Sutra is said, that there isn't any, along with everything else. This is one of Buddha's very basic teachings. It's the second one, that the one that he brought to his students, along with the Four Noble Truths. So, as you can see, the monster is holding the whole thing in its claws. And the monster is time. So we're in the clutch of time, you could say. And inside are three animals, very hard to see in this picture. One's a snake, one's a pig, and one is a rooster for greed, hate, and delusion. And they are the nub of the wheel on which the whole thing turns. So it's not that we don't want to be like that, because it's what Buddha understood. His revelation was, oh, we are like this. I can't get perfect like I'm trying to do. For 6 years, he strove to be perfect. He strove to get away from old age and death and all the horrors of poverty and suffering. And it didn't work. He just starved to death. He could not purify himself. So that's when he finally sat down and began to look into his own life, to study the suffering that he saw in himself and everywhere around him. And his deep insight was this circular round being driven by greed, hate, and delusion, the basic essence of an ignorant human life, a human life unwilling to accept and admit its own failure to be perfect and to begin to realize that the self that is driving this understanding is not real. So it's a vision you could say. And the Tibetans have turned it into this beautiful drawing of painting. It's very brightly colored, showing how what an interesting kind of trap it is that we're in. And it said that only human beings that wake up can step out of this and be free. So then the question is, how do we free? And that's where Zazen comes in. That's what Buddha did. He sat down. He stopped chasing after different ways of thinking about and trying to make things happen, and just sat down and allowed things to be the way they were. So, are there questions about this before I go into the Four Noble Truths? Paul?
Yeah, it occurs to me that any thinking is delusive thinking.
Yes.
And the only way out is to stop thinking.
Yes.
Give up that path for understanding, because it doesn't lead to understanding. And just as you said, allow things to be as they are, without the mind cluttering it up.
That's half. Mm-hmm. Because we do think.
Well, it's not stopping the mind.
It isn't stopping the mind.
It's just not going to the mind for the answer.
Yes. Yes. Or allowing the answer to be provisional.
Right.
I mean, we do seek answers. In fact, our whole practice is based on, you know, question, a big unanswerable question, really. But that we don't stop thinking. We don't attach to a thought and hold on to it. And that's what Buddha said. We don't cling and grasp. So we have a thought, and we're willing to hold it as long as it seems okay, and just let it go if it's not true. Which sounds so easy, but if you have a dear beloved who has been beloved for a long time and suddenly she says, I don't like you anymore, letting it go, it's really hard. We give our whole self, emotional self, as well as our thoughts, to our ideas and our experience. And so to really practice with this takes a lot of devotion, really. Intention and devotion. To be willing to see that I'm not the queen of the world or the king of the world, that what happens to me is happening because of so many different things, there's no accounting for it, and just let it go. But of course we cry a lot of tears, we feel really bad, and that's fine, that's part of it too. Our emotional life is a part of it too. And we just have to see that that's the way it is. It's the not seeing that creates the suffering, the real suffering. The not seeing that says, oh, it can't be so. Or how can it be like that? Or I'm going to change it and make it something else. When it's obviously what it is. So here are the Four Noble Truths in a very, I found this in my files, and it's a little stiff, but it's pretty thorough also, so I thought it might be helpful. They say, they call the Buddha a doctor sometimes, and this is like seeing what the problem is and then prescribing for it. So suffering, another word for suffering is, and one that seems closer to the real meaning of it from Sanskrit, is dissatisfaction. It isn't the suffering of having stubbed our toe, or even having lost our lover so much as the clinging to the self. Self-clinging. Which means whatever doesn't work out the way I want it to makes me miserable. And I keep wanting things to be better than they are and try to fix it. And I don't want to actually see what's going on. It's based on our willing ignorance, you could say. I refuse to. I can blame others for it. I can blame a number of different things. The time I was born, if only I'd been born before, .. and it would have been better. Or if I had different parents, or, you know, all those things. None of which is anything but an illusion. I mean, we are what we are, and we came from way, way far back. We have no control over how we came to be here. So Dogen said, seek out and restrain someone who is nevertheless deluded, and you will eventually encounter a greatly enlightened person. So that's what Buddha did. He sat down and saw how utterly deluded he was, how ignorant, how foolish, and eventually encountered a greatly enlightened person. And as Dosho Port, Mike Port, said, the deluded person and the greatly enlightened person share the same internet address. Not bad, eh? Like that. So it's just this person seeking this person. So seeking, leads to the insight about our craving, if we're lucky, if we're really sincere about what we're doing and willing to acknowledge what our situation is. Having seen that, it's not a pretty picture, but it's not a terrible picture either. It's just the way things are. It's not that we need to punish ourselves or even regret it. It's just to be really interested. It's amazing how we are. I think that's why the Tibetans made such a fascinating picture of it, because it's so intricate and fascinating. How, and that's just a little piece of it, really. Just a little piece of it. Because it's three-dimensional. It just looks like a flat thing, but it goes this way and this way and this way. It's huge. Our life is huge. So in the Second Noble Truth, it shows the dependent arising chain, ignorance leading to formations, leading to consciousness, etc., to birth, aging, death, and sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair. And having seen this, having seen how we generate ourselves, how we, this wonderful poem about a woman who carried water in a basket and kept mending the basket, and finally the basket broke. And all the water came out. And the moon that had been reflected in the water was gone. She said, oh, I've been mending the basket all my life, putting myself together over and over and over again, trying to hold it together. And the second truth is pointing to that. That's what we call clinging or grasping. Is this huge effort we make to try to be what our parents wanted us to be, what our culture wants us to be, what we think everybody wants us to be, which we don't even really know, the stories that we make up about ourselves in order to fit and fit in, even though we fit already from the very beginning. There is no place that we do not fit. And so this insight, the only way we can fit is not to be a solid, stone-like self person, all knit together very tightly so it can't be penetrated, it can't change its mind. But something magical and flexible and open to what comes next. And the third noble truth is the exhaustion, it says here, of lust, hate, and delusion. And they call it nirvana. Or burning out, or being done, breaking the chain by, and it says, lust for pleasant feelings, resistance of painful feelings, and ignoring really everything. So, before we die, one way of saying nirvana is that's where we go when we're done. But as long as we're a body, then we still have our five senses. And so, of course, we still experience pleasant and painful and everything in between. But by understanding our situation, those things are a different experience. And then it ends with the Eightfold Path, which I always think is just the best thing in the world, because it doesn't end with shame or blame or anything really hard to do. You don't have to wrap your mind around something and believe it or figure it out. It's just how to live a healthy, wholesome, kindly life. It's just 8 pointers that anyone can do, which I think is the essence of it. It's not something special. It's not something fancy. It's just how to be how to base our lives on a wholesome experience of selflessness, to live for others as well as for this, to live with everything without picking and choosing and judging and getting all scrambled up in our ideas about how things ought to be. So I have Deshi Maru, in his wonderful book about the Heart Sutra, says this in a different way, the Four Noble Truths. He says number one is called Kutai in Japanese, in which it is saying that the phenomenal world is obscure, ignorant, and steeped in suffering. And that's the world that we usually see when we turn on the television set. And that's the world we often get so upset about. Oh, this is a really, really difficult, terrible world. And if we sit down with ourselves, we have to see that we ourselves are a part of all of it. We have to be. There's no separation. Thich Nhat Hanh says we are the world of suffering. The second noble truth, called Jutai, is the cause of the world of suffering, greed and desire, is born of ignorance. Ignorance of who we are. Just that. And to clinging to that ignorance. Clinging to the self that we hope we are. The third one is Metsutai. Metsutai, the absolute world of lived awakening. The absolute world of lived awakening is serenity and happiness. It's the other side of dissatisfaction. The other side of grasping. He says, abandon yourself. That's nirvana. Let that one go. And the fourth one, Dotai, is the Eightfold Path. So he says, like Buddha sitting, let the whole painful story of humanity flow into your consciousness without intervening, without being frightened and trying to flee. Just be aware of the law of consequences. So I think that's... I want to not talk about the Eightfold Path because I want Carolyn to talk about it next week when I'll be gone. So, but this, there's still time to talk about these first three. And maybe I've confused everything more than not. Deshi Maru says, give yourself to the cosmic order. Which is another way of saying Dharma. The truth of things. Which is way bigger than we are. Questions?
So how the sutra said no, none of those
heart sutra says
existing.
That's right.
What are the four noble truths?
No four noble truths. No. Nope.
That's
no chain of causation. No.
Is it no suffering, no origination? Is that the part that says? What's the part?
No suffering, no origination, no stopping, no path.
Mukushu metsudo.
Yes. Mukushu.
So you cannot kind of find the boundary there, or?
Yes. Yes. So that's the beauty of this. That. And as Red Pine goes into detail, the whole Heart Sutra is based on the Sarvastivadin's belief that these things are so. And it's a very fixed, hardened belief. And so the Heart Sutra is just sweeping that out so that the mind is free, even though the mind is enlightened by this, you could say, this information that comes to us, this insight that is shared with us. At the same time, if we hold on to it and make it into something, then it's just another thing, another false thing, pretend thing. So, yes, it's, I always think it's a big eraser. It's just erasing everything that Buddha ever taught. Till there's nothing left. And yet it's all here. So it's important to know both sides and to understand our human frailty and helplessness in a way. And in another way, it's very important to realize our freedom. As we are, just as we are. We're not going anywhere. We just have to be right here because there isn't any other place to be. So it's utterly paradoxical. We can't really say it. There's something in the middle that can't be said. That holds both sides. Thank you. Paul?
This is a little weird, but do you ever make a Mobius strip?
Yes.
You take a piece of paper and you make one twist?
You twist it, yeah.
Right, so that it has only one side?
Yes.
You can label one side form, the other side emptiness, make the twist.
And there they are.
And there they are.
Yes. Great image. Great image. Karen?
I don't know if I would meditate if it wasn't pleasant. You know, I get a lot of pleasure out of meditating. And so...
That's what keeps us going.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's what Buddha found. That's why he actually began. The story is that he remembered how pleasant it was just to sit in his father's garden and not think about anything. And so years later, after he tortured himself trying to get pure, he thought, maybe I should just sit like I did as a boy in my father's garden. So that's the saving of it. But it also, sitting brings up everything that the mind and our conditioning has provided for us. It's all here, which is what's spelled out in that first noble truth, and the printout, the different stages of mind that the Sarvastivadins invented, and that in a certain way is helpful to understand how the mind operates. And the Vijnana, the storehouse, the Alaya Vijnana, is the mind of all our memories, all of our experiences, going, Buddha said, all the way back to the Big Bang. No, he actually, that was part of his experience under the tree, was to see all the way back, and he was animals, and he was rocks, and he was trees, and all of those things. And of course, that's true. It's true for all of us.
Yes.
So,
the suffering comes with others, in my experience.
In relationship?
In relationship.
Yes.
It doesn't come that much in just sitting here. I'm pretty peaceful.
Yes.
I don't suffer much when I meditate. I suffer when I'm in relationships.
And the relationships don't arise when you're sitting?
No.
Hmm.
Well, I mean, scattered fragments of this and that and what happened during the day.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to happen tomorrow, those kind of things, but it's not painful. I don't experience it as painful.
You're lucky. Yeah, it's...
Or maybe it's just repressed. I don't know.
I'm not sure it's repression. I think it's how we relate that creates the self that we identify with. And so if that self is in conflict, it shows up right away. But if you understand yourself as others as well as yourself, then you begin to feel it. And I think that's what it's pointing to. That it's not just me feeling good, it's me feeling for and with everybody. And that's the source of compassion. So that unless we feel for others and with others, then we don't really we want to keep the relationships on an even keel, but we don't really connect in a deep way. And that may not be true of you, so that's just how I've understood this so far.
Something to think about.
Yeah. Sit with. Yeah. Thank you. Well, it's 8:00. We have Buddha's birthday coming up, and we will have a half-day sit on Saturday, and then we'll have a short ceremony where we pour sweet tea on the baby Buddha. And since we can't offer incense, I hope everybody can offer a flower on the altar as some kind of appreciation for Buddha having been born in the world. The Buddha, baby Buddha, points to the heavens and points to the earth and says, above the heavens and below the earth, I above am the world honored one. And then he takes 7 steps all the way around and smiles on everybody. So, and then the gods, of course, pour down sweet rain on him, and the flowers come down on him. So we reproduce that appreciation of this birth, this amazing birth, which I always say is exactly how we got born, each one of us. When we come out, here I am, and take a look. Every little baby that comes out is just squalling and ready to go. It's quite amazing, including you and me. So it's mostly an appreciation of that life. And it's a springtime thing, just like Passover and Easter and whatever the primitive ones were that brought out the rabbits and the eggs. It's all the same kind of rush of life that is coming up. So please come if you can. Tell your friends, bring children. Kids love it. They love pouring tea on the baby Buddha. So that's the best. When there's a bunch of kids, it's really super. But it's fun for us to do too. It's really lovely. And then I'll be gone next week, but I will be back the week after. And Carolyn, you will be in good hands with Carolyn. So. Anything else?
Could we have some volunteers to set up Saturday? You will be here? Okay, say it. And does anybody have some basins and a ladle for the ceremony? And is willing to drink some tea water? Is that what you want? Tea water?
Yes. Yeah. Sweet tea. Oh, we need a basin for the baby to stand in.
And a table or something.
And a table. Well, I've got a table. And I've got a basin. And a little scoop. I could just bring those.
Okay.
And then flowers. Maybe flowers.
So, yeah, I can be Doan. Are you going to be here?
Yeah, I can share with you.
Okay, we'll share. Yeah. I'll start off.
Okay. One minute, Sid.